It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break.
But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Matt Perlman. He's a serial entrepreneur and business consultant, and we're going to talk about pricing and packaging services in a way that give you business leverage. So stay tuned for that. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring pricing and packaging into the equation is that it's so crucial to know your numbers so that you're leveraging your time, your talent, your money so much better. And it's hard to do when things are in a vacuum. I was talking to a colleague the other day about, and she helps to develop sales teams for companies. And one of the things the owners were complaining about was that their business development person wasn't having enough impact on the bottom line. So she asked them, what are you selling? And they're all excited. They got four different product lines and how smart they are for diversifying. But then she asked, do you know your profit margin on each one? You can hear the crickets chirping in the background. Cricket, cricket. Not an answer. If they don't know their profit margin on each product line, how can they possibly evaluate whether their business development person is spending his time on the most lucrative opportunities for the business, or even if what they're selling actually makes a profit? So I had given thought to this in my own business. I know my clients have wrestled with it, and it comes down to you can't change what you don't measure. And many business owners are classically number phobic. I mean, let's face it, I went into law because, you know, wasn't so thrilled about numbers. And guess what? Numbers are the lifeblood of your business. And that's something that Dawn Fotopoulos, who's been a previous podcast guest here on Business Breakthrough, you know, some of the things that she recounts in her book, Accounting for the Number Phobic, are that, you know, numbers are my accountant's problem. Or if I work hard enough, the numbers will take care of themselves. That sound like anybody? Or how about, I'd rather spend a weekend with my mother-in-law than deal with the numbers. Why is this such an issue for business owners? I mean, hey, we go into business. That's the definition of an entrepreneur, someone who goes into business to make a profit. Why is this so contentious? Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. The first is tracking and managing numbers is a skill set that many business owners haven't been trained in. I know I certainly wasn't. I had to learn a lot of it on the job. So we're not trained in it. It's not why we went to school. It's not why we developed the skills that we have. Another reason is it's not necessarily the fun stuff. The marketing, coming up with service offerings, imagining the possibilities. That's the fun and creative part of business. Whereas sometimes things like understanding my pricing and my sales numbers feels like, ugh, bean counting. But I think a third reason is when you really see the numbers in your business, you can no longer live in denial about what's going on in your business. And that can be really scary to, you know, to have to face. Gee, do I have to close my doors? Do I have to maybe take on a job? Do I have to do something completely different because I'm not earning the numbers? So if you don't understand the numbers and you don't look at the numbers, then it's a lot easier to stick your fingers in your ears and go la, 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 and pretend that the world is not necessarily falling apart around you. But the fact is that if you don't know which services give you the most opportunity for growth and leverage, you're operating in the dark. That's something I touch on in my report, 10 Steps to a Million Dollar Business, that if every client is a one-off, then you're always going to be in feast or famine mode, and you're not going to be able to get the scale and leverage that you are probably looking for in your business, which is why you're listening today. So make sure you go to businessexponential.com/podreport to get your copy for those 10 suggestions of how to create a million-dollar business. And it's also why I'm excited to have our guest this week, because our guest, Matt Perlman, and I, we're going to talk about how to calculate the profit you're making on your current services, both so that you understand it and you get a healthy financial foundation, but that you also create the foundation for continuity revenue. It's far too easy to say, oh yeah, I'll just put a bunch of stuff together, I'll put a bunch of offerings together, but if you don't know exactly what they're costing you, you could actually be putting together something that loses you money. So a little bit about Matt. Matt has founded 6 companies and over the past decade has led the launch, acquisition, and sale of a number of other different businesses. He sold his digital marketing agency in 2013 and since then has really been focusing on ways of offering strategy and process, like we're going to talk about today, offering that strategy and process to other companies who are interested in the kind of success he had. Matt has led seminars, trainings, and workshops for over 1,000 people on topics including leveraging internet marketing for business growth, personal development, and game-changing business practices. But when he's not doing that, Matt can be found playing soccer, playing golf, or training for a triathlon, or perhaps traveling the world with his family. And we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Matt, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, Nina. I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know that you've had a background both in terms of being a business owner, seeing startups from an investor standpoint, and I know that you know a lot of entrepreneurs get stuck because they haven't aligned their process with how to make money and they don't understand the value of their services. So can you talk a little bit about how do you figure out that value in dollars and cents? Not the world is going to be changed because I'm a graphic designer, but really understanding what's the cost and what should I be charging?
Yeah, those are great questions. And for starters, you want to get a sense of what the market bears for comparable services so you kind of know what the universe is. But I typically don't want to base my own business exclusively on what other people are charging or what other people are pricing their services at. I like to go back to the basics and see, literally, what do I want to create for my business in terms of profit, in terms of revenue, and then trickle that down to myself. What do I want to earn? And if I'm willing to work, let's say, 50 hours a week on my business, and I have that many hours, and I want to generate X thousands of dollars per month on my business, I right there and then can see I better charge at least blank dollars per hour if I'm going to live that lifestyle, be able to watch my kids or be able to play sports or whatever else you want to do besides running your business. And then you know how much time you have, how much money you want to make, and you have a sense of where you need to be charging.
So if I know, let's say I want to make $100,000 a year, I say that just so I can make sure the numbers work, and I only want to work 100 hours in a year, then I need to be charging at least gross
$1,000 an hour.
$1,000 an hour.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the market bears. So there better be a lot of value.
Yeah, for sure. But that's a good question there, because if you literally look and see, I'm only going to work 100 hours this year and I better charge $1,000 an hour and the market's charging $150, you have to ask yourself a couple questions about what business you're actually in, if you can compete with the market at that price point, or is there a niche that I can go after that is willing to pay that value? And then it really comes about confidence, right? Can you go up to the plate and say to someone, my hourly rate's $1,000,
Right.
And some people can. And I think it's well warranted if the business supports that.
Mm-hmm. And you raise a really interesting point that a number of business owners, one of our other guests had talked about, we get stuck in starting from today and working toward tomorrow instead of, as you suggested, saying, what do I want to earn for the year? What do I need to earn for the year? So if I know that I want to walk away with $100,000 free and clear because my personal expenses, let's say, are $50,000 and I'd like to put some away, then I need to also factor in, okay, so it's the $100,000 that I earn. Let's say it's another $50,000 in business expenses. And I mean, I say this laughingly because I'm in New York City. Let's say another third on top of that for taxes. Right.
Sure.
So I'm really looking at trying to generate maybe $180,000 a year.
Right, right.
To be able to walk away with it. So it's a really, really great point that you need to start with the end in mind so you can reverse engineer that success.
You could go ahead and build a business that's express purpose is to generate a certain product or fulfill a certain service, but if there isn't any relationship to what you want to do with your life and how much money you're going to need to live it, then inherently you might sell a service, over-deliver, undercharge, and all you're left with is, you know, concerns that you can't keep your business afloat. Because it's hard enough to generate sales. It's not easy to generate new business. And I mean, there's ways of doing it where it makes things easier, but that's a big game to play. And so if the business that you're generating is not, you know, following a certain methodology and a certain communication process and a certain business delivery process with which the fees you're earning from that business doesn't go to the bottom line like you're just talking about, to pay your taxes, to pay for kids' college, to pay for your vacations, to go on trips, to just to live and eat. Like those things really, I look at it in very clear English, where if the business needs to earn $200,000 and after taxes, I can take home $100,000. Because let's be honest, if you're a sole proprietor or a small business owner, you are your business financially. Mm-hmm. So you can choose to take the money out yourself. You can choose to reinvest it in the company. But if you take a dividend payment or take a salary out of the business, you know that the revenue at the top line better be well enough to pay taxes and then pay you what you need for your rent and stuff like that. So, yeah, I really think, why not start that way, right? Everyone else starts the other way. Might as well try something different and be successful that way because it's worked for me and my clients. Yeah.
Sure, sure. And I know that you were able to successfully sell your business, so clearly that's something you brought in. And along the lines of factoring in your profit, how does one factor in those intangibles such as I need to spend, let's say, 30 hours a week at networking events? How do those kinds of things factor into issues of profit? Because those services usually are intangibles. There aren't necessarily the fixed costs beyond rent and telephone or maybe some employee salaries.
How I look at that piece is, okay, so I want to work 100 hours a year and charge $1,000 an hour and make that number. But if you want to scale the business, you're going to need people to work with you. And inherently, you start thinking to yourself, well, if I wasn't doing this, who would be doing it and what would they cost to do it? And all of a sudden, the deliverable, let's call it, you're consulting someone on marketing services. And it's just your time, but really it's not just your time because you have to do things like networking to acquire the customer or pay for some materials to deliver the pamphlets or the website. And so all these things need to go into account for what maybe the market pricing would be for those items. But at the end of the day, if you want to scale your business, you have to leverage people and process and time, right? And so if you're going to do the networking, that's got to be accounted for in the price of your services. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but I like to do that. Bundle it all in there so you have an all-in-one fee that you know when my customer pays that number, it's going to cover the time I took to acquire that customer, the time I took to actually do some due diligence with the customer and understand their business, and then actually fulfill the service and follow up and all the little fees that go along that process. Iron them all out, have them very apparent, very clear, remove all that vagueness so you know here's all the expenses that go into producing this one service. And it's not just your time. It's never just you and a clock. There's always things you're doing. There's software you're using. There's computers. There's paper. There's pens. There's dinners. There's all these things that go into actually producing the service. So it's not just trading time for money, you know?
Mm. So Matt, you touched on something important, which is understanding that there's going to be a sales process. It's not just the time for money, but it's also the time and effort and perhaps some of the marketing materials that you're using in order to attract the clients. Can you talk a little bit about either what you or some of your clients have done to really drill down on understanding what their sales process is so that you can meet your goals?
That's a great question. So let's just use the assumption that we already know we're delivering this one service, and here's how much I'm going to charge for it, and here's how much money I need to earn this year, right? Let's say I know I need to earn $100,000 and every customer over the course of a year is worth $10,000. So I need 10 customers that I'll pay the revenue to cover all my expenses and at the end of the day make that $100,000. So I need 10 customers. So if you look at a funnel from the very bottom, a sales funnel, so to speak, 10 customers comes at the bottom and pays $10,000 over the course of the year. They made
you're talking the narrow end of the funnel.
Exactly, the very bottom. So the very top of the funnel is wide, and then it kind of cones down towards the bottom. And so if you reverse engineer this even further, you can say, all right, well, if I need to get 10 customers, how many conversations do I have to have with which I can present to them in a very clear fashion, answer questions, set a proposal out, answer those questions, and then get them signed? And unfortunately, most businesses are not don't have a lot of clarity on that. And so we always recommend using technology. Maybe there's some software that we can recommend at some point. And I'm sure in between you and your great guests, you have some great recommendations of what sales CRM software could be used to keep track of your conversations at different stages. Mm-hmm. But let's just say you did all that, you have that in place, but or you don't, and you look back at your history of all your notes and your networking groups and your referrals and your cold calls and your staff, and you say, wow, I realize, you know, on average, our business closes 25% of all the conversations we have. So if we have 10 customers that are required, and we need to have 40 conversations to close 25%. And then it comes straight up to that point is, who are those 40 people? Because if you need to close 10 a year, who are the 10? Are the 10 one type of vertical business? Are they all plumbers and HVAC companies? Or are they all bankers? Are they all small businesses of certain revenue sizes? And what are some of the psychographics, what are some of the demographics, even the geographic targets that might be relevant for you so that you know that I have to talk to 40, I'm gonna get to the 10, where am I going to go farm or hunt for the 40? So let's say, you know, the 40 are going to be all, you know, they're all small business owners that are IT professionals because you just do marketing for them. You love that kind of business.
Okay.
So the game is I need to find 40 conversations with IT companies. And then it just becomes like a game of like, where's Waldo, right? Where do I find 40 IT companies? Who do I got to go to? And so one thing that we do a lot, and I know, Nina, you yourself are very well versed in this, is around, you know, different types of referral marketing strategies or even standard sales strategies that you might get through a sales coach or a sales trainer. There's different techniques you might want to use to get in front of people. And then at the end of the day, I like to keep all the conversations aligned. So wherever I go to network, I say the same kind of things to the same kind of people. And then when I have a sales conversation, I repeat some of the same content, so there's that continuity. And then when the customer comes aboard, they see the same information again. And so the kind of conversation and the experience they have with you as a, let's just say, brand in the networking phase carries all the way through onto the onboarding of a new client. And so there's little, you know, techniques and things in between there in each phase, but that's inherently as a structure, a way to look at it, how you can kind of gauge how to grow your business to a certain dollar amount every year based off of how much effort you have to put in.
In terms of the technology that you or perhaps clients have used to track either the process or the success or the time they're spending in these kinds of conversations, which platforms have you found most useful?
So I haven't found really one technology that's phenomenal at everything. But I found a few technologies really strong that even integrate. If you're dealing with large, complex projects and you have a team that's really interested in managing deeply these big projects, I've used myself and some other companies I know that worked with have used Liquid Planner before. If you're just in the business of managing some tasks and some projects, platforms like Basecamp are really good. If you're a very brave soul and you're willing to expand your willingness to take your efforts and your mind and your money, you can go on to Salesforce and really see what technologies are available on that platform. And then from a CRM standpoint, a sales CRM standpoint, you know, there's a lot of lower price point products that are really good, like a Pipedrive or a less annoying CRM. There's some larger ones like a Contactually or an Insightly that are they're good tools. So, and then what I would say on top of that is there's other maybe marketing automation technologies that might help you, you know, because a lot of small businesses are very interested in growing their email lists. So there's a lot of marketing technology tools that can help automate some of that process, which in some cases also double as a CRM tool. So there's products like Infusionsoft and SharpSpring. things like that, where you can, you know, build a list, and then you can use maybe an email template to thank them from, thanks for great coffee. I look forward to talking to you again. And then that can be dripped on them over the course of the next couple of weeks for other things. So I think it really comes down to people's budgets, their resources, their willingness to own it, and like really own the process of knowing that I'm going to integrate some technology into my business, and I'm not going to let this fall through the cracks. This is too big of a deal.
Right.
That's the distinction really between a business that's going to be happy and sustain maybe $100,000 a year and a great lifestyle, and maybe ones that want to scale, leverage process to get to million or plus, you know.
You touch on something that's really important in that if you're going to scale, part of it is scaling yourself and knowing who else you need to bring into your internal process to help you manage all of these things, because it's very hard to be both service delivery as well as the lead generation person. But I've seen a lot of businesses just bringing on staff, hoping that they will be the moonbeams and unicorns that poof will suddenly make a sales process work really well. So how deeply does a business owner need to understand their sales process before you bring on other staff?
Unless the staff you're bringing on has been proven to be able to do it themselves in another environment. Well, even then, I still wouldn't relieve that. I wouldn't remove yourself as the owner completely. But is like a scale, how experienced that person is can give you the kind of like confidence that you can do it together with them and figure it out and know it. But on average, that's not the case. I think on average, most business owners are really great at a trade or a craft or a skill, and they typically know how to deliver that technical aspect of their services. It's the operations, whether it be sales or operations or fulfillment, that most owners lack. And so I think knowing the entire process and having written down on paper really gives me, and I think a lot of people I've spoken to and worked with, that that other layer of understanding is, where do I need to plug in? And then who do I need to plug in where, based off maybe personality type or skill set or their own personal proclivity towards that thing, whether it's sales or whether it's managing finances. But I think really owning the entire process as the owner is critical, so that you can, A, jump back in if you need to, should there be an illness or should someone leave the business. And then that training is always going to be the most important thing, like having good checks and balances and having people understand how their role impacts the entire structure, you know, kind of like a factory, where does the one person at the one end of the assembly line impact the one at the end? Like they're all related, but sometimes you're so isolated in your own job, you don't know that.
Right.
So in a small business, keeping that continuity, both on paper, but through like morale and like daily meetings and communication. So those things are all like, different spokes of the wheel that I think people overstep sometimes and then have breakdowns where an employee leaves and all of a sudden the whole business falls because no one was paying attention to what that employee was doing.
And we talked about the importance of clarity in a sales process, but I got 12 networking events today.
Networking is a component of the sales process. It's not the only part of it. And my experience has been, and part of my conversations with people I speak to, clients or not, is go to that event with a clear intention. Like, what do you want to produce at that event? Because if I go to a networking event with no intention and complete ambiguity, maybe not even knowing who's in charge, who will be there, I'll usually prevail because I just personally have a desire to network and talk to people, and usually I'll pull information from people and I'll meet great people. But on average, those that are not maybe as big a fan of networking will kind of get lost in the shuffle and go to 12 events and come back with either tons of business cards or none. Mm. And both are equally as bad.
Okay. Can you give a couple of examples of what a clear intention would look or sound like?
Yeah, of course. So we're that business that consults for marketing, a marketing business that consults for IT companies. And I'm at an event. And I know it's an event for the newest technologies in networking and management, server management. So I know there are going to be IT companies there. So one of the techniques I like to do is just kind of make sure I know who's in attendance in advance and see if I can pinpoint three or four people that I know I'd want to meet because they just meet my personal criteria of being in the space or awesome people or well-connected and whatever those criteria that are important to me in my business. And then at the event itself, if you're going by yourself, there's one way to go. If you're going with a colleague or a buddy, it's another way to go. And if you're someone that has not been to this organization before and you're new to it, latch on to someone as fast as you possibly can. One way I think it's great to do that is in advance, like I said before, you know, do some research, find two people you like and email them through LinkedIn, or just email them if you have their email address, or call them and say, hey, I'm new to this organization. I'm checking it out for the first time. How does it go for you? How do you like it? And they'll tell you how they like it and say, great, I'd love to meet you in person. Maybe I can pull you aside 5 minutes before the event starts because I know you're busy. And then that's kind of, you know, kind of set up now, right? And then you can go to the event, look for that person, and you automatically have a new friend, a new colleague that you're no longer cold to. There's not a random walk up and, hey, I'm just kind of standing next to you waiting for one of us to acknowledge each other. It's like I've done some due diligence in advance, and I'm talking to you, and then I can learn more about your business. And I think that's a critical method to get in front of somebody. But the real insights or the real techniques come through really being someone that's going to listen to what the other person is up to and what's important to them, and really avoiding as much as I possibly can talking about myself and what I do, and looking for ways where I can contribute to that person. Going to that event with the intention of walking out with 3 or 4 business cards of people who I'm going to have coffee with within the next week is one of my critical, like, ironclad things where I won't go home, I won't leave the event until I have 3 or 4 people that I just infatuated with that I want to meet with. With the same token, in some cases I'll get 3 or 4 people real quick and I'll leave because I've completed something. Now I can go back and spend time with my wife and my son. So it's like that life-work balance there, right, where I don't need to spend the 4 hours because it's scheduled for 4 hours. Or if it's just going really well and you're meeting a lot of good people and it's worth it, you stay. But don't get caught up in the I have to stay or I need to stay or I have to do something. Go in with some clear intention, come out with that clear intention, and the follow-up comes next.
Right. So you've outlined a really great process. The first is truly understanding the numbers that you want to meet in order to live the life that you want to live, working backwards from that, understanding your pricing, the sales process that you need, certainly some tips on networking to get those people in the funnel. Now, one of the things, you know, you talked about being with your wife and son that can really help with the scaling is creating a foundation for continuity revenue. Can you talk or offer some tips to creating the package pricing? Because obviously you need to know your numbers so that you're not creating a package that's going to cost you more than you're earning from it. So what's some of that thought process around creating a package pricing, particularly for service businesses?
Yeah, something I kind of stepped over before was we mentioned, hey, in this scenario of working 100 hours a year, looking for $100,000 of business and you get 10 clients to pay $10,000 for the year, I kind of assumed to myself I had a monthly retainer or a monthly program fee that I was getting from each customer per month. Why I shared that is that my experience has been most companies charge hourly or charge by project. And some charge by retainer or packages, so to speak. Packages could look like one-off projects. You know, we're going to bundle up these services and sell it to you. It's going to be, you know, one payment or two. Or sometimes people can do it in more of a recurring revenue stream, which I find to be more valuable and more reliable for small business owners. If I have to chase business every month and then also fulfill on the business every single month, it becomes that scale of what do I do now sometimes where, you know, business is light, I better go hustle, but all of a sudden I'm strained to meet my deadlines for my current customers. You know, all those concerns can somewhat be alleviated by having recurring revenue coming in where you're still delivering the same exact business, but it's more reliable for both you and for your client. They know what they're going to get. They know when they're going to get it. They know how often they're going to get that work done. And you can guarantee, you know, based off your contract, obviously, you know, $1,000 being deposited in your account every month or $1,000 being charged on the credit card on the first of the month. It gives you that sense of security there.
Sure. Now, that's great in theory, and most small business owners would have their hands raised when they say, yes, I want recurring revenue. But what kinds of services or projects lend themselves well to a recurring revenue stream?
It's a good question. Like, I usually have to talk my way out of why every offering can't be put in that in a model of recurring. If you're coaching someone, if you're delivering lawn care, if you're a dentist, if you're any of these services that may appear on the cuff as a one-off project, or maybe there's a 2 or 3 projects a year, right? There's that. So one thing that I recommend companies do is go look back at your books for the last, let's say, 2 years and choose your top 10 clients that have paid you over the course of the last 2 years. Take all the money they've paid you and I guess just take one of them, or take them all individually, I should say, and then add up how much money you've earned in revenue for 2 years. Let's say company number one and company number two, you've earned $100,000 over the last, or let's say $24,000 over the last 2 years. They've technically paid you $1,000 a month, just not in that format. You know, they paid you $1,500 there and $7,500 here, but annualized it was $1,000 a month. So you could easily have a conversation with these customers if they're still clients and say, "Hey, we're actually moving our business model away from, you know, these kind of one-off projects where we're just, you know, call you every now and again, or you just call us when you're ready." Because I really understand your business, client, and or patient, right? Let's say it's a dentist. Just because, I mean, this is a little, maybe that's a bad example because healthcare and insurance are a different beast, but you know, but there are some very successful private healthcare professionals who don't take insurance, who can put their customers and their patients on a recurring invoice, because health is not a project. Health is not a one-off thing. Your lawn doesn't just get taken care of once a year. Your you know, coaching and consulting of a business doesn't happen once. Even legal. I mean, yes, there may be a need for creating a corporation and then writing some documentation, et cetera, but at the end of the day, if you outline what you know to be the needs of a client over the course of 12 months and show them, here's what most of our clients go through. They do this, they do this, they do this, and do this. And if we charge you one-off for each one of these projects over the course of the year, you'll pay blank. If you'd like, we can put you on a monthly program, and we're available for you over these fixed number of hours or these fixed deliverables, et cetera, et cetera. And you can convert your projects into programs, provided your pricing for your programs are always in integrity with your finances. And what I mean by that is that you don't undercharge and drop your prices to the point where I'm just trying to get the deal in. I'd love to have recurring revenue, but who cares if I'm losing money? It's recurring. Like, that's bad, right? You're starting charging customers less just because you want the comfort of having the money come in. But what you're actually doing is putting yourself out of business because you're delivering services that you can't afford to keep delivering because you'll have no money to pay yourself and then eventually to pay your employees because customers are being undercharged.
Right.
So there's that delicate balance there.
That is a great point. When is usually a good time to have those conversations with clients? Is it mid-year, any time of year, end of year?
I mean, I guess it's a business-by-business case where maybe if you know your business increases at a certain point in time and you know the clients have to spend more money because they're in advertising or they like to advertise and you're an advertising agency or the like, and it's, you know, they're going to spend a lot of money at the end of the year for the holidays. Well, maybe in the end of the summer, early fall, you start having that conversation. You say to your client, "Hey, listen, you know, I went back and looked at the books and we looked at the numbers, and it turns out your business, you spent a lot of money in these months and less money in these months. Would it be easier for you to have a straight, flat expense to our business, to our company, to make cash flow easier for you?" And if it's at a peak, it's right before the peak, they'll be like, "Oh, thankfully you came along. That's a great question. I'll do that." And they kind of talk themselves into it, you know? My experience has been the clients won't say, "Well, in the good times when I'm paying you less than I usually would, I'm happy. But in the bad times when I'm paying you more," they usually don't go that way of saying, "Hey, can we make our agreement less now because I'm not really using you so much?" Once you build that integrity with the client, build a relationship, and then most importantly, have them sign a contract, it doesn't matter to some degree, right? So, well, it does matter, but I mean, that's pretty critical. But that's one time to do it, maybe seasonality. Another time might be that you yourself are rebranding your business. You're saying, "I'm going to build myself a new website," or "I'm about to change my new focus." And if you're in this inquiry of how you're going to revise your company and focus on a new program, you're probably looking at rebranding or doing something different. You want to change. So it's a really good time to have like this relaunch where you can literally schedule calls and these kind of business reviews with all your customers and outline with them, "Here's what our company's been up to the last year, and here's where we're going this year and next year. And here's what you've done the last couple of years with us, and here's where we see you going. But tell us more about what you have in mind over the next year to 2 years." It's not a sales conversation, but it is a sales conversation. You know, your intent is to kind of get back into that mode of, "Let me inquire, if I haven't in a while, about where you're going, client, and what your goals are, client, and what you want to do. And maybe the services we're offering right now are no longer consistent for the game you're playing in the future. They're just bigger. You need bigger team. You need more support. You need more of this. You need more of that." So since we're moving our business in a different direction, we thought maybe we'd offer you this new program where we're going to be charging monthly instead of these one-off projects. And then you can bring the financials numbers back in again and show them how much money they might save if they go to this program, you know, over the course of a year, because you'll give them a discount on price a little bit, you know?
in order to give the discount, you need to know that the discount isn't going to choke you. It's a discount, so maybe it's a little less of a profit, but it's not that you get no profit.
If a recurring revenue is critical for your business, you should be willing to lose a little bit of profit to get it. A little bit. You don't need to. You don't have to, by the way, but you could be willing to. It's a choice, right? At the end of the day, if you have your prices mapped out properly, where you know your personal expenses every year are $50,000 and the taxes will be another $35,000, and you tack it all on top of it, you better bring home $100,000 in top line revenue so that you're taken care of. And so at the very least, your hourly rate or your base price for your program should not be lower than whatever one number is. Let's just say it's $500 a month. You cannot charge less than that, because if you do, you know on an hourly basis, based off of how much utility you are providing to the business, you'll lose money. So you can say, listen, I know I can charge no less than $500 for this package, so maybe I'll retail it at $1,000, and then I'll tell the customer we'll do it for $750, so that this way they're getting some discount, and I'm also making some more profit, or I'm giving myself some buffer. And then those are some techniques, not trying to ever pull one over on people, but they want to know they're getting value, and everyone wants to get value. And if you show them that, all these projects a la carte, all these services a la carte would cost this, as a total price of $1,500 over the course of a monthly basis, but we can charge $1,000, then they'll say, well, I'll save $500 a month in perceived value right now, and I'll save that much in cash at the end of the year. So it's real, it's not just smoking mirrors, it's actually real savings. But as long as that $1,000 is, again, above your minimum of $500 per month, then everybody wins.
Great. Terrific. Well, Matt, thank you so much for being here today and sharing these really valuable insights about pricing and packaging, because it's such an important perspective and opportunity in helping scale a service business. So thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.